You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
All right, the Reds, it is weekend. I am Gareth Roberts. I have got Mo Stubbs, Liam Prescott and Sam Shetty with me. I'm going to have a big chat about the Reds being the best team in the world, being champions of England, Europe and the world, having a lovely mural painted all over a city centre wall right now to mark the fact that they are absolutely brilliant and that everyone around the world knows what Liverpool is because of Liverpool Football Club. That's nice, isn't it? We're going to start off with the Brighton game last night then. And Mo, Sati, I'll come to you first, mate. A good game, a nice game to watch. A good performance from Liverpool overall. And Brighton probably feel fairly satisfied with themselves as well, in a way, because although they obviously got nothing out of the game, they played pretty well too. Scored a nice goal. Could have had at least one other. I guess the only thing, moments of concern really, is the number of chances that Brighton do carve out in the game, and you wonder, on another day, could Liverpool have actually lost that game?
I'd say rather than on another day, because at the end of the day, we've seen performances this season where there's been periods where the other team have been threatening, they've been knock, and occasionally it's been a little bit last ditch, but we've always been able to find just that right block, that right person in front of the ball. They don't go in, and the goal that they did score was an absolute quality goal, so you can't, sometimes you have to hold your hands up with that one. But it was a strange first 10 minutes where we absolutely blitzed them 2-0 up, and everyone was just like, hey, this is it, it's going to be another fantastic Liverpool performance. And you never know what the players themselves, because there was a little bit of sloppiness in possession, which I think did give Brighton a little bit of impetus. But in some ways, Brighton had had a rocket from the manager after the way they performed against Man United, where they basically bent over and let themselves be tickled by Man United, and they were. So they were always a team who tried to be progressive, tried to play their football, and determined to do that. And coupled with those periods of sloppiness from us, it's him in the game. But sometimes as a team, you need a test. You need to be reminded why you are the best. And I did feel like we had another level to get that third goal. It was pretty much smooth sailing. It was a good performance from a lot of people, I think. And there were a lot of people who will come off the pitch feeling better with that. There might be a couple who will be a little bit more nervous. We'll have to wait and see.
It's wild your internet again, Mo, there.
Yeah, I know.
Few little metal Mickey moments there already. I should say that coming up on the weekend as well, we have got Jack Welsh speaking to John Gibbons. He is the festival program manager for the Liverpool Arab Arts Festival. So John will be having a chat to him. John has also spoken to some lads who are running from Liverpool all the way down to London for James Place. And then it will be back to us later on to talk about the Burnley game on Saturday, 3 p.m. at Anfield. But Leanne, just concentrating still on where we are right now and what we saw last night and how good it is to be a Red. I mean, everyone's seen some of the fantastic stats that are kicking around again. Obviously, the fastest team to win 30 games in the history of top flight football, which is another one. 92 points now. Salah with his 100 goal contributions from 104 games, best defence in the league. Van Dijk playing football on his own by himself, passing to himself with his head. 23 successive home wins, 23 points clear. I mean, it's mad, isn't it, that I've just said all of that and we finally won the league after 30 years and still, I mean, maybe I shouldn't reference them, we've come this far, still people are finding stuff to moan about.
Yeah, it's a bit mental, to be honest. I think the thing you can say about this team is, I know everyone's chasing the points record, but whatever happens, the amount of records they've broken, they've basically committed their place in the history books. They are one of the best teams, if not the best team we've ever seen. I think the Brighton game kind of shows that. You know, Liverpool go really, really strong in the first 10, 15 minutes. Then they sit off a bit. Okay, they get undone slightly by Brighton. But then they come again. Van Dijk, as you said there, plays the ball to himself. He's just kind of taking the piss. Mo Salah's taking the piss with his 100 goal involvement in 104 games, which I'm not quite sure people really respect it enough. I think, you know, it's really easy for both of those players to take for granted how good they are because they do it every week. Van Dijk especially, you know, the way he defends, the way he commands the box is brilliant. But to go back to those records, it's almost like you scarcely believe them, and then when you do believe them, it becomes normal. So you kind of overanalyze it and think it's just completely normal thing to do. But this Liverpool team isn't normal, and what they've achieved is not normal at all. They've made a Man City team, who are brilliant, by the way, look absolutely average all season.
I mean, on that, Sanj, as well, what a thing I spotted last night from someone I reference a lot. I like his stuff. He pulls out wonderful facts and figures. Andrew Beasley on Twitter. He's noticed, and I've got it up in front of me because I loved it, that Manchester City's home record of played 17, won 13, drawn 2, lost 2 is the same as Liverpool's record away from home this season. Okay, they've scored a few more goals and stuff, as you would expect, but, you know, that's phenomenal in itself. And sort of, I like what Leanne said there about almost overanalyzing the situation. I felt my old mucker Martin Tyler was doing a little bit of that on Sky last night, in that, you know, here we are watching a record-breaking side perform unbelievably across the course of 2 years, really, now. And he's still picking away and he's still looking for something to be negative about in his miserable little voice. And, you know, there was a bit there where he referenced the fact that it had been over 7 hours since Liverpool had scored away from home. And then, you know, 120 seconds later, it was 2-0 to Liverpool.
Yeah, and I'm not getting on board on the whole anti Martin Tyler chat, but I'll go to my grave when Anthony Martial scored his first goal. He did in fact shout yes, and it was against Liverpool. But I've got nothing left to say about this Liverpool side. That I just think that I am the oldest person on this call, and I've seen all the Liverpool sides going back to 1978, and this team doesn't bear comparison to the others. It is better than the others, and it's comprised of so many parts of it, and you can't find fault. I mean, you go to Twitter, and you'll find fault in some people's minds, but that I think that's what Twitter's there for, is for people to moan on. They're so good, we're so good that we can allow Nico Williams, he's 18, isn't he? An 18-year-old playing at left back. He's actually a right back, converted winger into a right back, now playing left back. He more than held his own in that first half, and Klopp said afterwards, and he took him off because of the yellow card. And in those sort of games, you know, like, and the way referees are, they love to send people off. I think taking him off was a really prudent thing to do. But we are just brilliant. Can we just go back to Salah as well? I just don't think Salah is in any way appreciated the way he should be. Is it 100 goal involvements in 104 games in the Premier League? It's Premier League like gold dust. You won't see a player like that, and still people think, oh, we can sell him, we can get rid of him, we can get someone better than him. You can't get better than Mo Salah. He's literally the best of our front three. He's better than Sadio Mane, and he's better than Roberto Firmino. And people should get on board with that and just realise just how lucky we are to see him playing in a red shirt and see the player that he's become in a red shirt.
Absolutely, and well said again. Everyone's got lovely stuff to say today. I've just got to mention as well here that the Anfield Rap is again running something called the Embodiment of LFC Award. We did this last year. It was Andrew Robertson who won the award there. He got his full title off his ma there. because yeah, he won it last year because of course he does embody Liverpool in how he plays, what he does, how he acts off the field and everything else, and that's why he won it. Running another one of those awards this year, you can vote for the Liverpool player that you think this season has embodied LFC. If you want to get involved in that, just go over to our Twitter at the Anfield Wrap. You'll see the vote on there. Give it a vote, get involved. We'll count up the votes and we'll give the award to said player, whoever wins it. I mean, the thing on that, Mo, really, is that there are so many players now that you're just so proud of, aren't you? That you know, you look across this, like Sanj mentions Mo, and rightly so, brilliant again last night. Two goals, could have had an hat trick. Really funny to watch himself beating himself up and having a bit of a mad thing with Sadio as well, because they both want that golden boot, but it's all good and it's all good by me. You know, Mane's another one that you're proud of. Henderson's another one that you're proud of. Van Dijk's brilliant. Alisson's brilliant. You can go on and on and on. And even, you know, even Nico gets a mention there from Sanj. I mean, I've seen some people saying, you know, oh, I didn't really sort of like the idea that, you know, he's making his first start. He plays him on the wrong side and then he hooks him at half-time. Now, I sort of get where they're coming from to an extent, but then what I would say is you've got to remind yourself of the culture at Liverpool on who the manager is. In the past, that might have been something that would really be getting to Nico, that he might be sitting at home going, oh, shit, I fucked it up. I can guarantee that, you know, with the team that Liverpool have got, they will have sat him down already. They will have spoken to him. They will have encouraged him. They will have said, you did so many things right. You know, there was a goal-saving block. You got forwards. You got involved. You put crosses in. You know, you looked confident and you were playing on the wrong side. It was just an experiment. You did nothing wrong. You got a yellow card. We were taking a precaution as Sanchez. You know what I mean? You trust the management team to be able to handle this. Whereas I think in the past when you've had a more, you know, like an iron fist rule, or like, you know, I remember Julio hooked, what was he called? The lad who got shot up the arse. Otsemabor. There we go. Thank you, Sanj. he hooked him at, I think it was Man City away, and you never saw him again. And it was like, you know, and I remember thinking that was harsh, that was harsh. And, you know, Julio, for all that he did for the club, did get up the nose of some players. There's no two ways about that. You don't get that with Klopp. He seems to just treat everyone in the right way, say the right thing, do the right thing. And again, we're in such a lovely place because we've got all these boss people at our club.
I think so. I think we can trust everything that Klopp said post-match about Nico is exactly what he said to him in the dressing room. Is that he, things you mentioned, the fact that he was being converted to a wrong position. It was only the fact that the yellow card, and you can't really trust the referees. Nico, he said, he's a 19-year-old kid. I can't ask him to not make a tackle for a whole half, which is exactly what he would have had to do in that situation. I do feel more calm and confident that someone can go out and express themselves in that position and still feel like it's not going to harm them in the long. It's going to take all of those things we mentioned into consideration. If anything, I think what would have probably happened in the dressing room after the match is that Klopp would have been having Oxlade Chamberlain for not really covering him over enough and leaving him exposed those couple of times. And in those situations, if you're a manager and you're bringing in someone young, you want the more senior players to be able to do their job, to allow the kid to be able to express himself without any kind of fear and nerve. But going back to the whole embodiment thing and the fact that our squad is just filled with great people, great characters, it really is us to think about just one person, because not only are they so entrenched in my mind as a group, as a unit, as a collective, but they are all sounds. They really are all sounds. Genuinely, I mean, okay, most people could maybe wouldn't want to hang out with, but like that's one or two out of 28 is that in the squad. So I think we've never had it so good in terms of who you want to root for, and you will probably still enjoy rooting for even if they're not wearing a red shirt.
Absolutely, mate. And as I say, if you want to get involved in the vote for that award, just go over to our Twitter. You'll see the tweet there. Dead easy. It takes 2 seconds and then we'll count those up, and we've spoken to the club and we're confident that we can get the award to whoever wins it. Okay, well, as promised, we've got a load of stuff coming up now. We've got an interview with Jack Welsh. from the Liverpool Arab Arts Festival. A group of lads who are running from Liverpool to London for James Place. And then we'll be back shortly with some chat about the Burnley game.
It's Neil Atkinson and John Gibbons chatting about Beer 52, which I was mostly getting stuck into last night, John, whilst I was watching a fabulous game of football between Brighton and Hove Albion and Liverpool Football Club. They are our favourites. And the Beer 52 really brought it along for me, to be quite honest with you.
I'm glad it was your accompaniment to yet a good game. It's interesting, isn't it, the idea of sort of drinking from home, because I know neither of us sort of do a lot of it usually, but it's different times and things like that. We're all at home a lot more, so we're forgiving ourselves a few while the match is on.
Oh.
And it's not our fault, there's footy on every night.
Well, no, there's that, but but my position genuinely is I'm trying to just sort of limit myself to Liverpool games, to be honest with you. Like, that's that. Yeah, it's still, but still, I mean, you know, say what you want. The game's lost 90 minutes. There's a half time in there, so you can do really rather well if you crack on and focus. And certainly, if the Reds offer a sort of a heart pounding performance, which they did last night against Brighton, it was very much a match to drink to, I felt last night, John.
That's sort of tempo.
Yeah, what did you think of the game? Well, five cans. I am sort of, as I've said before, I am a Beer 52 customer. I'm very, very happy to be one. And when it got delivered yesterday morning, it felt like the timing was effectively absolutely perfect. So you can become one as well. And they are sort of sourced and curated from the best breweries on the planet. There's loads of good stuff in there. Literally, honestly, I didn't have a bad can last night, in all seriousness. There wasn't even anything that made me go, oh God. Even the oatmeal stout was drinkable, though I did treat it as a bit of a dessert and do it when the match was over. So it's beer52, that's the number 52.com/wrap. And you get it for free. You obviously got to sign up to do that. You cover the postage, which is just short of £6. It's £5.95. And then you can cancel if you've had a go and it isn't for you. You can also do a thing, John, as well, can't you, where you can choose between light and dark beer if you want to.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so if dark beer is not for you, you can choose a light option. But, you know, we don't encourage you people to experiment at the Anfield about the whole idea behind all these things is trying things you wouldn't necessarily, not going for the normal stuff that you'd always buy. The whole point is to experiment. So we'd encourage you. But if you know for a fact that you don't like dark beer, or for example, then you can just choose the light option and they will sort you out from that. And as you said, Neil, stuff comes from all over the world. They often theme it and things like that. And I've enjoyed receiving them. I've certainly enjoyed drinking them. And yeah, I'm pleased that, you know, that they're partnering with us.
Yep, we are very much on board with them. On board with them in every way. It's coming to something if I'm spending my actual money on them. It doesn't get a more legit endorsement than that. So it is beer52, that's 52.com/wrap. You can take it all from there, go from there, enjoy it. And genuinely, if you have a go and it's not for you, I mean, I'm not saying that there'll be any sort of recourse, but by all means, come and say to me, I didn't enjoy that echo, and I'll raise it with you and I'll have a back and forth. That's how certain I am that you will. So it's beer52.com/wrap and get stuck in with us.
So it is John Gibbons for Weekend. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by Jack Welsh from Liverpool Arab Arts Festival. Jack, welcome to the Anfield Wrap.
Hi, John. Thanks for inviting me.
First of all, if you could just let people know a little bit of the history of the festival, because it's been going a long time now in the city. In fact, it's in terms of recurring festivals, it's one of our oldest.
Yes, that's right, John. So the organisation started in 1998, and it was founded from within Liverpool's Yemeni community. So it's got really strong associations and links, especially with the L8 area. The festival has kind of started off very focused on improving people's education and awareness of Arab culture in all its forms. So that's food, dress, traditional aspects. And since then, it's kind of blossomed into an arts festival. In 2002, the first Liverpool Arab Arts Festival took place as a weekender. And then it's grown since then, and it's become the biggest annual festival of Arab arts in the UK.
So in terms of, obviously, this year is going to be a little bit different. Those of us who've enjoyed it over the years, you know, of like the big opening parties, the food, obviously the closing party as well, always goes down well, and sort of everything in between. This time, we're not able to do those things, and you're certainly not able to kind of to put those on. So how have you sort of adapted and changed it this year?
Yeah, so I think it was in late February. We've got a very hands-on board. We've got an artist-led board, and we had a board meeting and really started to talk about, oh, hang on, this situation that's developing, this could really affect the festival. We made the decision there that we want to continue this year, even if we can't hold events in Liverpool. We work a lot with all of Liverpool's great cultural venues, so like Blue Coat, Liverpool Philharmonic, FACT, Picture House at FACT. We thought if we can't go to them, we still want to put events on for people. So we started to really think about moving the festival online. And what that meant, though, is the original program we had in place and spent about a year working on, we had to have all those conversations, and probably about 75% of that program had to be either cancelled or postponed. And that includes Family Day, sadly.
Yeah.
So for anyone listening, Family Day is the traditional close of LAF, and that happens at Sefton Park Palmhouse each year on the final Sunday. It's a huge celebration of Arab culture, live music, food, dancing. It's such a joyous event. In fact, I was looking back at some photos today, really sad that that won't happen this year.
Yeah.
But what, on the positive side, what we've been able to do is program events that we normally couldn't. So we're having a lot of talks, literature events, music performances, all happening digitally, but working with some really exciting artists across the world. So there's a lot of positives in that.
Yeah, I mean, the positives as well in terms of maybe reaching people as well. So travel suddenly isn't an issue. People can sort of just log on. But also, I mean, I would guess, Jack, that, you know, maybe some people who weren't sure if they'd like something, maybe something you'd like to dabble. It's maybe a big commitment to pay your money and go the Blue Coat and kind of sit there for an evening, whereas some people who were curious might log in and find themselves surprised that they maybe, you know, enjoyed it more than they expected.
Absolutely, that's spot on. It is a huge commitment to go to any event, isn't it? You buy a ticket, you travel there, you go. Especially if you're not familiar with that organisation or that event, it's something else. And you're right, people could, you know, I think we're going to stream the majority of the events through Facebook Live. So there's a real chance that people could stumble across it and, you know, really enjoy it. And I think as well, you know, during lockdown, I don't know about you and everyone who's listening, but events that you'll suddenly find yourself listening to or watch, you know, like 6 o'clock midweek, you know, I was watching an interview with the artist and film director, Steve McQueen, a couple of months back. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. You know, if this is an event, you know, you would sell your left hand to try and go, and you're just watching it.
Yeah.
And I think for the whole arts, you know, that's something that will be really positive to take from this situation. It's a difficult time for the arts as well as every sector. And I think as well, a lot of our partners in Liverpool who are venue based, it's going to be a very hard time moving forward. And as soon as we can get back there, we will. But we will also keep this digital element up. We want this to last. We want to keep doing digital events as well as the physical ones in Liverpool.
So tell us a little bit more about the programme this year, if you don't mind, the kind of events that people can enjoy.
Yeah, sure. So we've got a really, we've got a range of events, and the festival runs from the 9th to the 18th of July. And we've got a ongoing film programme, which viewers will be able to log in and access throughout the festival. Bit of an almost like on-demand model, really. We've got a working with BBC Arabic Festival, a selection of shorts from female Arab filmmakers, which is super interesting. We've got an Egyptian feature film, Wulana, which is a bit of a thriller, really. That's it was quite huge in Egypt. Our music program is in partnership with Marzam UK, who are a music events organisation in London who work with Arab artists across the world. Particular highlights from the music programme. On Friday the 10th of July, we have Hello Psycho Aleppo playing, who really wonderful electronic music. Samir, who is the artist behind it, I absolutely love all his material. That's my kind of tip for the whole festival as well. Our artist in residence, Lisa Lux, who is a poet, really powerful performance poet. She is running several events with us. We've got an event with Comma Press based in Manchester, who are bringing three Palestinian writers in a discussion about the experience of writing in Palestine, about Palestine, and all the various issues around that. I could keep going if you'd like.
I mean, it's all on the adabartsfestival.com, isn't it? The website. I was just
having a look
there. It's adabartsfestival.com. In terms of the events, I'm sure you're encouraging people to catch them live. But yeah. If people miss them, will there be chances to kind of watch it back as well?
The majority, yes. The majority will be putting on our festival YouTube account. But some of them we are keeping as special events where if you sign up and attend, that's it. That's the only chance, really. So we're going for a good... Most of the events you'll be able to catch up on, but some of them, it's just the experience, really.
No, absolutely. And all enjoying something together is so important. It's something that we're, I guess, missing a little bit at the moment as well.
But yeah,
giving people those opportunities is good. What kind of positive impact have you seen for the festival? Because I was... thinking before earlier about a story that came out a couple of years ago about when Mo Salah joined Liverpool and how he changed the perception of what it was to be a Muslim, and I thought that was interesting. You know, it just popped back into my head today when I knew I was talking to you about how when people are shown a more positive side to any culture, it can surprise people, but it also can change kind of perceptions, really, when maybe all you see are negative stories kind of online. Is that something that you see as part of the role of the festival, and that's something that you feel like you're sort of helping achieve? So on the family day, for example, and I've been to a family day, and you get people from all walks of life, all different kind of, you know, spheres of society, really, and just going away. And, you know, it's not the message front and center, you know what I mean? But it's kind of subconsciously there, isn't it? That you know, that this is actually a more positive kind of part of, you know, maybe society that maybe you don't necessarily see all the time.
Absolutely. It goes back to LAFS when it was founded. The mission was just to do exactly that, kind of stop people being seen as another. When there was so much that, you know, there was so much to enjoy. The culture is so rich. It's just a really important part of our work, and the potential for people to see that online or stumble across it only amplifies that, which is super important. And obviously Mo Salah in Liverpool, that's been a really, really interesting an interesting time for us as well, seeing how that's happened. And, you know, one of LAFS's very close partners, the Liverpool Arabic Centre, have released some video content a while back about Mo Salah and the community. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. It's totally worth watching. And even a figurehead like Mo Salah and the impact wider, you know, obviously he's got an international reach of millions, you know, that's only a really amazing thing. We're doing what we're doing, and that is bringing artists over, artists based in Liverpool, artists based in the UK with Arab heritage, and international. In terms of one of the challenges that we're facing, it's the same as any festival or arts organisation. It's visa restrictions coming into play as well as in play. It's just going to make it more and more difficult to bring artists over and share that culture and remove that other. And that's really what we're about. So that being able to do it digitally, that's opened a whole new door in how we can address that.
Yeah. It's adabartsfestival.com if people want to check out more. Obviously, they're across social media as well, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and the YouTube channel that Jack mentioned earlier. Do dip your toe in. I only found out about the festival by chance, really, 3 or 4 years ago, and I was so glad that I did. There is something for everyone, and as we both mentioned before, this unique way, although it's not necessarily the way a festival would want to be run, what it does do is allow people to dip the toe in, have a little bit of a look, and what have you got to lose, and I think you're surprised, you might be surprised, but Jack, thanks very much and best of luck with it all.
Oh, thanks John. Yeah, it'll be a good challenge.
Hi, is that John
speaking?
John, you've won £8,500 on the football pools.
You're pulling my leg.
We're not. You've won £8,500 on the football pools. What will you spend it on?
Wow, thank you so much. I've got family over in New Zealand that I've not seen for years.
Well, book yourself a flight, John, and good luck for the next game.
Oh, yeah, I'll definitely keep playing. Thanks ever so much. It's honestly made me so happy.
This is what winning sounds like. Test your skills. £10 gives you 10 games every month plus 4 free games for new players. And there's £3 million up for grabs this Saturday. Please gamble responsibly. Sign up at footballpools.com/play.
So it's John Gibbons for the Anfield Wrap, and I'm in James's place, which is a familiar surrounding. Those who've been listening for a while will know that we've been supporting James's place on Catherine Street in Liverpool City Centre for a long time. To help people who are struggling with their mental health, it's a place that does wonderful things. I know a lot of people personally who've really benefited from the support that they offer here, and we're lucky to have it in the city. But it needs supporting, it needs financing, so we continue to help people who really, really need it. And I've got with me four gentlemen who are doing just that. They're taking on a mammoth exhibition. So if you could just sort of introduce yourselves, first of all.
Yeah, of course. Thanks. Thank you very much for having us. So my name's Henry, and the four of us, starting tomorrow, we will be running back to London. So it's a 240-mile journey. We're going to be averaging about 30 miles a day, running for 8 days, all trying to raise awareness for men's mental health and to be able to raise money and fundraise to support James's Place as well, which is a charity that we've really enjoyed kind of being involved with for the last couple of years while we've been planning this. And yeah, it's been an exciting couple of years building up to this moment.
Yeah, I mean, The journey itself, it's all well and good saying 240 miles, but first of all, that's a long way. But secondly, like, the country's not built on people running 240 miles. Like, there's motorways and train lines and stuff like that. Like, I mean, how much work was it sort of figuring out whether you could do it in terms of planning the route and things like that?
So we had a bit of a curveball. We had an original plan before, which was a bit more of a logistical challenge. And when coronavirus happened, we had to re-look at what we were doing. So we couldn't fly anywhere, obviously, which was part of our original plan. And we wanted to try and figure out how we could still make it relevant to James's Place, the charity, and being able to fundraise to support them to open their new centre in London. We thought, would it be possible to try and connect the two centres? And a bit of a look on the map and trying to figure out what that route looked like, we realised that there's actually I know there's a very nice canal going from Birmingham to London, the Grand Union Canal, and then you've got the Shropshire Union Canal going from Liverpool to Birmingham as well. So connected the two and put it all on a map and realised that 240 miles might just be within our capabilities.
I mean, you say capabilities, it's the sort of differing levels of fitness in the group. Oh, you're nodding at me.
yeah. I think there's varying extents of training being done between us. But I think in terms of sort of like ability, we're all very fit and able individuals. We've all always been quite committed to the sporting environment. So I think challenge and endeavour, again, is something that we've always done as a group and individually. So we've never shied away from a challenge. I mean, maybe we are a bit naive to go into this.
Yeah. I've done one marathon. I think Henry is more the runner amongst us, and he's done a couple of ultras, not anything like this, but you've done a few longer races. But yeah, I think we've bitten off quite a lot from this one. We'll see
I think
it goes.
Part of it, though, is just to let people know kind of what they're capable of doing and being able to recognise that you might be able to do a bit more than you think you are, which is something that I've certainly recognised for myself and when I think about my own mental health and having difficulties with depression in the past as well. And I lost my father to suicide in 2012, which is why I think James's Place is such a fantastic charity, because I genuinely think a service like this would have really helped him when he was at his worst. But when you're running and when you're having to push yourself and think, you know, how difficult is it going to be to do an extra couple of miles today, or to, you know, to push through and run for 5 hours or 6 hours, or probably towards the end more like 8 or 9 hours a day. I just put myself in the position of someone that might be struggling with suicide, and just thinking actually the difficulty and the challenge that we have to run that day is pretty incomparable to the challenge that people who struggle with suicide have on a daily basis.
And you're doing it together as well, which will help you. But I'm sure you'll, at different times, you'll be sort of struggling to get whose idea was this sort of thing, but you'll be able to support each other. And that's a nice, I guess metaphor is the word for, you know, with our own mental health as well. Sometimes we can feel like we're alone, and sometimes we can feel like, you know, problems are insurmountable. But if we can look to our friends and we can sort of look to support each other, then kind of things become a lot easier.
I think that's something that's shone through in training. We've done a lot of the training I've done, I think all of us have been individually. So been out there early mornings, late nights, after work, before work, just running on your own. And it's incomparable how much easier it is to run when you've got a mate next to you and you can just chatter away, and 3-4 hours just slips away quite nicely. But when you're on your own, you know, it's really, really long, and it's tough, and it's repetitive. And you know, you do run out of things to think about, and it becomes incredibly boring. And I think that's quite transferable to dealing with mental health issues. You know, you tackle it on your own, it's incredibly hard. And what we're trying to show here in a way is that if you share that load, even with just one other person, it's going to be a lot easier. Hopefully that shines through a bit.
I think we've gone through a few things in the last few years. Henry mentioned his father. We've all had sort of ups and downs, and we've been lucky that we've had a friendship group that's enabled us to sort of lean on each other and get ourselves through various life events. And, you know, this has kind of been similar in a way, because we've been training for this big, big, long race. It's going to be tough in a very different sort of set of circumstances. But,
with each other, I think we'll be able to pull each other through this. And we've got two great guys who are helping us out as well, who are going to be helping us with our campsites each night and helping us with aid stations and make sure we've got the right fuel and nutrition and food and water along the way. Very lucky to have two able, capable bodied people along to help us out.
So by the time this goes out, I've caught up with you guys the night before you start, and by the time this comes out, you'll be hopefully towards the end, so you're all sort of fresh faced now and feeling good about yourself. But by next Friday, you'll be hopefully coming to the close of probably a few blisters and things like that, but hopefully still feeling good.
Yeah.
210 miles in at that point.
Yeah.
A few blisters, maybe.
Yeah, a few blisters. I think some jokes could maybe go down the wrong way if they...
Friday I'm just looking at a couple of blisters, I'd be delighted.
It is some effort. And I know you guys have had a lot of support already. I know you've done a lot of fundraising, but I'm sure people listening to this will want to support you, because it's incredible what you are doing. And James Place, hopefully people know, you know, what an amazing place it is. And so if people want to support you, if people want to sort of donate, how do they do that?
So we have a fundraising page online, a Virgin Money Giving page. But the easiest way to find that would be to go to our Instagram, and the link is on our page. So to follow us on Instagram, we are The World Run 2020, all one word. And in our bio, we have the link to our fundraising page. It's worth mentioning as well that, well, actually, this is going out later, so it's not relevant, is it? But we're going to be documenting it all live.
You can get the end, though. Yeah. See what they look like? See what's the old team?
Give us a follow and come and see how I'm looking on the last day.
I mean, just to sort of finish, Andy, on, you're not from Liverpool, you found James Place. How lucky are we in the city to have somewhere like this? Because I don't know intimately the sort of mental health support, you know, in other areas. I know here, and I've visited here, and I know some people who've benefited, but this must be a charity that you feel is very special, because you're giving up, you know, all of you giving up time and effort to support it. So yeah, so how fortunate, if that is the word, are we to have this?
Incredibly fortunate. I think that there are lots of fantastic mental health charities out there, all doing work in different ways. But I think James's pace is really unique in that way, that it offers very very focused support to individuals, and has a very targeted approach as well, and also a very, you know, a very unique approach to being able to help people and encourage men, and giving them a safe place to go. Really, I think that's what's so unique about it, is that there's nowhere that's really comparable to James's Place. So yeah, that was really a big motivator for us, and fundraising to support the opening of a second centre in London was something that we're all really, really keen and really excited to see happen and to make a reality.
Yeah, well, best of luck. I'll be watching live if no one else quite would be able to. I'll be watching live. I'll be supporting you. It's incredible what you're doing. And yeah, good luck. And hopefully you're all still smiling this time next week.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much indeed.
Cheers.
It's John Gibbons and Neil Atkinson, and it's another insert. It's something else that's come from our friends at Audio Boom, and the company is called Stitch Fix. And I've just told Neil a little bit about it, and I've piqued his interest. So hopefully we can get you guys interested as well. So Stitch Fix basically is an online personalized styling service for men and women. Where an expert stylist picks clothes just for you, based on your taste, size, and price preferences, and sends them straight to your door. So it's a delivery service, and you put in there what you like, what size you are, and what, you know, what kind of prices that you want to pay, and then they send it to you. If you like them, you keep them and you pay for them. If you don't like them, then you just send them back, and the postage is free on that as well. So it's no harm done, and it's getting people to try things, and that's what's got me interested, Neil. I'm slightly concerned. I'm a bit of a boring shopper, and I know no one's ever accused you necessarily of being that when it comes to clothes, but I worry I'm a little bit safe, and a little bit of, I know that looks all right to me, so I'll get them in four different colours. Whereas, so what I like the idea of is that someone going, do you know what, actually, John, why don't you try this? Surprise yourself, put it on, and I'll be there in mine, looking in the mirror, asking Laura what she thinks, getting very little back from Ted, and then going, do you know what, actually, yeah, I wouldn't have picked that jacket, but now it's here, now I can visualise myself in it, literally, visualise it in the mirror, I'm feeling it. So I think this could be a good thing for me. What are your thoughts?
I think it could be good for you. I always remember when, via online shopper, I once bought a pair of red kecks, and ultimately looked like a clown. so, you know, that's occasionally my concern on this sort of stuff. But, you know, but I literally chose those ones. I'm intrigued. Also, I like anything that's got a quiz. And I know that makes me really but anything that starts with, like, you've got to fill this form out. We're going to ask you your views on a series of things. How are you? I'm a man with views. You wait. You might find them jaunty at times. They're lively, my views. So no, I'm as soon as you've sort of, I mean, this is a really good example of me being perhaps easily sold or just easily excitable. But as soon as you started describing this to me, both off air and on, I thought, yeah, I'll have a bit of this. It sounds as though, as far as I'm concerned, it is about getting out of comfort zones a tiny little bit, and you might end up with something that you might not necessarily go for. For me, that's almost, to be quite honest with you, stuff that might just be a little bit sort of more well-known, that I'd often just sort of think, you know what, I'm not that bothered by that. You know, I'm not that labely a person. I'm currently wearing a bit of Perry Ellis. I don't know if people know who he is. And I've got, like, I occasionally, like, probably the labely label I wear the most is Penguin. And I'm sort of all right with that. But on the whole, you know, I'd sort of, at times, I'd almost gloss over that in shops. Just see what I mean? Yeah. I'd go, well, I'm not going to go with that. Whereas if something came through, that might be the bit that actually got me something that was a bit more like that. I'd go, well, all right, I'll try that on and go from there. So no, I think this is a very interesting idea, to be quite honest. Yeah, and it's UK-based, isn't it, now as well?
Yeah, no, it is UK-based, yeah. And they stock over 100 men's and women's brands, including well-known names and more niche emerging designers, so a real mix, and some of their own in-house brands as well. You pay just £10 for your stylist time, but then you can redeem that against the items you decide to keep. So basically, it's like a sort of, you know, you pay it up front a little bit there. And as I said before, it's try before you buy, so you only pay for what you decide to keep. It's also, you don't have to just subscribe, so don't think you're going to have to be, getting... You know, if you're the kind of person who just buys a wardrobe and then keeps it for 12 months, after Ian Salmon's just popped in my head for some reason there, Neil, but yeah, perhaps I'm being unfair. That is completely fine. You know, don't feel like, listen to this and thinking, God, they're going to be sending me stuff, you know, every few weeks, and I just get free t-shirts to like and stick with them. That is completely fine too. So it's either a subscription, or you can do a one-off delivery whenever you like. It is up to you. So the web address is stitchfix.co.uk/rap. That's stitchfix.co.uk. They want me to spell it, which I know is for clarity, but I always get these wrong. So
that was terrifying. I've got the little thing. You're reading it off here. And let me be really clear, listeners, it doesn't make it easy. It makes it harder, if anything.
Like someone said for clarity, I'll get them to spell it, and they've not met me. But here we go. stitchfix.co.uk/rap. I think I nailed it.
I think you did nail it. I mean, I'll just check it. I'll check it with Bully. I think you did nail it, yes. Honestly, the way they phrased that on the... people will never see it, and you probably shouldn't do this thing where you criticise the thing they sent over with the brief, but they haven't half made that more confusing. And I want to be clear here, especially for John.
Yeah, and I'm not criticising. I'm just saying that they're probably used to dealing with people who can read better than I can. stitchfix.co.uk/rap. Get stuck in. And let us know if you enjoy it. Let us know how you get on, but thanks to them for choosing to partner with us. And yeah, we'll go back to the main show.
Okay, then, now on the weekend, they're back with us, back with the panel, and we are talking about the game with Burnley at Anfield on Saturday, 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock officially on the telly as well, which is a new one, obviously. You're actually allowed to go and watch the football in a pub at 3 o'clock, and you know, it doesn't feel like you're in a speakeasy. So if you fancy that, you can get involved. Leanne, Burnley, weird one. I think in that, you know, when football resumed in June, everyone was saying Burnley had big problems. Everyone was saying about, you know, there was loads of situations around contracts at the club. The media were reporting, sort of trying to stir up a bit of beef between manager and chairman and all that kind of thing. And, you know, obviously Man City absolutely pumped them 5-0, and everyone was like, oh, well, here you go. And you know, they looked like, on paper at least, being one of the most on the beach teams out of any team in the Premier League, really. But then since then, they sort of, you know, made everyone eat their words, really. You know, beat Watford 1-0, beat Crystal Palace 1-0, drew with Sheffield United, who are obviously having a great season. And then yesterday, beat West Ham away 1-0. The odd in that, like, they keep getting tonked, basically, in games and then popping up with a goal. And that's not a pattern I want to see at Anfield on Saturday. And just sort of looking at how they've done across the course of the season and trying to get a bit of a grip on what they're like. Surprisingly, if you break the tables down into home and away, they're actually better away than they are at home. So away from home, they're actually the seventh best team in the league on the basis of that, in that they've played 17, they've won 6, they've drawn 4, and they've lost 7. Only scored 16 goals. But, you know, that's a decent haul, 22 points away from home. Better than Manchester United, for instance. Loving getting a dig in there, of course. what do you make of them, Leanne? And what do you think this game could be like? I mean, there was a game not so long ago, you know, at Anfield against Burnley, where it was really, really frustrating. I remember it well. I remember people getting at each other's throats. We've moved a long way away from that, it feels. But nevertheless, do you think they could cause Liverpool some problems? Do you think they could frustrate Liverpool at the weekend?
I think it's going to be a little bit like Aston Villa, in the sense that Burnley will come and try and just park the bus. They'll try and frustrate you and kind of keep the tempo slow. I think we've seen since the restart, if you keep the tempo slow, it feels very pre-season-y. You've got the drinks break, which slows it down again. You can have kind of the tactical element of the game that you wouldn't usually get. It's interesting you mentioned about the away record, because there's always been this myth that Burnley are amazing at home and that Turf Moor is some fortress, but it really isn't. Mm. Burnley are better away from home, and that's kind of built on their defensive ethos of, you know, tackling hard, don't give away too many fouls. If you give away free kicks, do it against teams who don't have the aerial ability that they do. And I do think that's what they'll come and they'll try and do. They'll try to frustrate Liverpool. Personally, I think, you know, this is a Liverpool team, we touched on it before, that are so good that, okay, you can frustrate them for 25, 30, 40 minutes, but they're going to get that chance. And most likely than not, they're going to finish it. You look at Mo Salah, you look at Sadio Mane, they're desperate for goals at the moment. Firmino as well, obviously not scoring in the league yet at Anfield. So I think it might be frustrating for the first 10, 15 minutes, but unless Burnley somehow bring a surprise and get a goal off a free kick or a corner, then I think it will be another routine day for Liverpool. And you know, Van Dijk and Gomez are really built for these kind of games as well. They don't have the the frailty of, you know, a long ball goes up and they miss it. They're not Dejan Lovren in that sense. And we see, you know, Van Dijk's headed the ball to himself in the last game. I'm sure he can deal with a few headers this game.
Yeah, and Sanj, I mean, it's one of them, isn't it? There's always a danger, I think, when you talk about these things, that you end up sort of bigging up the opposition a little bit too much and forget, again, how good we are. And, you know, it's absolutely perfect, the record at home, obviously, this season. 17 out of 17. It's another record that Liverpool can get this season if they manage to go the whole season and win every league game at home. They've got every chance, obviously. Worth remembering, of course, that the last time we were beaten at home in the league was April 2017, which is unbelievable. So, you know, as Leanne says, I think, you know, we can sort of look at Burnley and say, oh, well, they're doing this, that and the other. They've done all right since the restart. I mean, I found myself saying similar about Brighton, I've got to be honest, in that I was saying, yeah, they've done all right, they're one of the better sides, they play some all right football at times, blah, 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 but Liverpool still won. And I'd expect Liverpool to still win on Saturday, wouldn't you, mate?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's overplayed how much problems Burnley give us, because I think, right in thinking, that we beat them on New Year's Day back in 2018, and we've won every game since then against them.
Yeah.
The only time we haven't beaten them, I think they beat us when they came back into the Premier League back in 2016, and beat us 2-0 at their place. But it's a physical challenge, which our team loves a physical challenge. They're all a load of... I'm going to use the C word. No, I'm going to use the C word. But our lot like the challenge. They really like to be in your face. I don't think Henderson's going to be fit for this one. But, I mean, I think the rest of them will be like, yeah, okay, show us what you got. When you look at a midfield of Fabinho and Ronaldo and probably Oxlade-Chamberlain likes a bit of a battle as well. And then I can't see the problems they'll give us. If it's just a pure football match where Burnley don't actually have that much to play for, we've got the 100 points that we're going for and this immaculate home record, which I think it's going to take an awful lot to take us off that track of like we want to win every single game at home. I can't see where the problems they're going to give us will come from. It just beat West Ham, was it, last night, 1-0? Beating West Ham 1-0 isn't like the greatest result in the world, is it? Let's be honest about this. West Ham would be relegated in any other season. It's just that there seem to be two other teams that are even worse than they are. So I'm not worried about Burnley, which of course means we're going to lose. But
no.
I fancy a comfortable 2-0 or 3-0 victory on Sunday. I can't see the problems they would give us. Our defence is too strong. Our up front, like you talked about, Salah's got the golden boot on his mind. That's why he was so pissed off at himself yesterday, because he knows that, is he two goals behind Vardy, 2 or 3? And I think he sees games like Burnley as a chance to catch up on.
Yeah, I mean, don't tune in on Sunday for the match, mate, because it's on Saturday. Mo, I mean, Liverpool have been phenomenal, as we've been saying all the way through the show. But equally, I think you can pick at it if you want to pick at it. And, like, you know, you can, for instance, highlight that, you know, Brighton had 5 statistically big chances against us last night, for instance. So, but I think Sanj is right to say that, you know, sometimes, and I talk about this a lot because I think it's that interesting the way minds work basically over football. And I think us as fans sometimes, you know, build up a side and go, oh, they caused us a lot of problems then. You know, they're the type of side that do X, Y, and Z. As Sanj says, we've been absolutely sound against Burnley for some time now. We beat them 3-0 away in August, way back in August now, seems like a long time ago. The last time we played them at Anfield, we beat them 4-2. Season before, we're beating them 3-1, beat them 2-1 at Turf Moor. And the one I was referencing before, you know, that 1-1 draw where we got frustrated at Anfield, that's September 2017. So, you know, I think Sanj is right to say that we're no longer that side that we used to be, where you'd be coming onto a podcast or you'd be going in the pub and you'd be saying, we got bullied there. We don't get bullied anymore. If you want to fight, we can fight, can't we?
Yeah, totally. And I think it takes a while for us being mindset, because you're right, you are always thinking about the times when Liverpool have looked good and then let you down in the past. And it's because maybe they're taking the team for granted in some way. This team don't do that anymore. I think even at times where teams are able to lay a glove on us, think about the time, the game you mentioned, the 4-2 game last season. I think they scored first. I think they got a goal from a corner, which is what we're going to have. And we was good enough to be able to weather that storm, come back, hit them with what we've got, because what we've got is still stronger than what they've got. And all is, we are still the team that have won 30 games out of 34, and they may have a good plan, but they are still Burnley. I think they'll come into the game. I think they'll be very pleased if Chris Wood can start, because they've been missing him in the time he's been out. They'll think that, they'll look at the way that we were sometimes sloppy and think if they play like that again, we'll punish them. And they can think all of those things. But ultimately, what we have is always going to be stronger than what we're going to be able to deal with it, I think. It might be that they do score a goal, but I still back us to score three or four.
And Leanne, you know, Burnley obviously are a different side to some of the other sides that you face in the Premier League in terms of how they're set up, in terms of what Sean Dyche does with them, in terms of maybe how they fight for the ball and things like that. What do you expect to see from the Liverpool side? Because obviously we've been seeing quite a few changes. You've got the five substitutions option there, which Klopp seems to be quite happy to get involved with. I mean, what I'm saying here in particular, I think, is that there was a lot of plaudits for the performance of Naby Keita last night. You know, it was a good 60 minutes. He looked bang up for it. He got an assist again. You know, he was hungry. He was everywhere. You saw a fella there that, you know, looked very much like the lad that we thought we were signing. But has he done enough, for instance, to now be in the starting midfield for Saturday?
I think so. I think that was part of the thinking when he comes off at 60 minutes. I know a lot of people are saying, you know, he's your best player in the night. Why are you taking him off? But I think the thing that people have to realise is that the games are coming so thick and fast and the players aren't used to playing at this intensity. And so therefore, him getting hooked after 60 minutes is probably an indication that he will start. In terms of the rotation, I'd quite like to see Curtis Jones play. I think, you know, we've seen a lot of him. He fits in really well. He doesn't look out of place. Nico Williams as well is another one who never looks out of place when he plays. And these are the opportunities that these young guys have to come in and slot in and do a job. You know, there's a bit of a gap in terms of quality, but if Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain isn't performing, then why give him another chance in terms of, you know, you've got a raw, young Curtis Jones who's performed well, is up to the task, has something to prove. Let him go and have 50, 60 minutes and then hook him if you need to. And I think that's what Klopp will do when he approaches this game. He'll look at opportunities for other players. Be interesting to see, you know, what happens with the likes of Shaqiri, who probably needs some minutes under his belt. Again, you've got Naby Keita, but you've also got Fabinho, you've got Henderson, you've got Gini, whose contract seems to be kind of running around, and people talk about Thiago, but actually Gini is a very important player, so he's probably got something to fight for as well in terms of performing on the night. Yeah, it'd be interesting. There's a lot of options for Klopp, and I think, you know, As Mo touched on before, it's about the fact that he can depend on these players, whoever they are. If it's a 16-year-old Harvey Elliott, he knows that those players will perform and give everything they've got.
And Sands, you know, Leanne's mentioning there that the options in midfield. One option we don't have or won't have is Adam Lallana. And, you know, it's come out this week that he's not going to risk him. He's not going to play him. He was basically a bit of an emergency break glass extension on his contract. We all know that he's likely to end up with Brendan Rodgers again at Leicester. I just thought, you know, before we leave this show, before we wrap up, what everyone made of Lallana's time at Liverpool, including yourself. What have you made of Lallana?
I think that my overriding impression is that when he's fit, he's a genuine asset to the way we play. He's got the ability to either slow the game down to suit where we are in the game. If, say, for instance, the game's 2-1 in our favour and we're looking to kill time in the last 5 or 10 minutes, he's the person who makes sure that we keep the ball and no one else can get it. He's also the person to inject that pace. And people used to talk about him leading the press when Klopp first turned up. And certainly we were a really impressive side when he was part of that. I feel sorry for him because of those injuries. And it's no way to know what kind of player he could have been if he had been fit for the majority of the last 2 to 3 years. But generally, I think he's been an asset to Liverpool. And I'll be sad to see him go. And I think also the other thing is, and you can tell that from the way his teammates treat him, he's genuinely a really popular bloke. I know he's best mates with Henderson, isn't he? I think we'll miss him. And I think players with that kind of experience, it's not easy to find them again. I wonder why that's whether why we're looking at someone like Thiago, because we need that kind of experience. We do need someone who's in their their late 20s or their early 30s, who's done it, been there. And with Lallana leaving, we haven't got that person anymore.
Yeah, and Mo, he's 32 now. He's 32. We paid 25 million quid for him. His record, he's not likely to add to any of this now. So his record will read that he played in 178 games for Liverpool, that he scored 22 goals, and that he made 21 assists. Nevertheless, I've got to be honest, I might sound a little bit harsh, but I seen the word legend attached to him this week, and I thought, oh, come on, he's not a legend. He played for Liverpool, and he did all right at times. He was also very frustrating at times. The injuries, as Sanj mentioned, too many Cruyff turns, not enough pace at times. I mean, you know, come on, we don't have to, like, polish everything. We can be realistic and honest about how he's been for Liverpool as well.
I think so. I think Paul Adam Lallana, a Liverpool legend, the time to do that is 15, 20 years from now when you're looking at the medals that he's won while at the club, which were the Premier. And if he wants to go on some kind of speaking tour with that, I'll down with that. I'll listen to all the stories, whatever you want. A legend because of what he's done on the pitch is a little bit of a stretch. But one thing I would say, of all of the players to leave Liverpool under Klopp, manager himself will be saddest to see go, because there was a long period of time in his first season, well, the first half of season, then his first, was one of his most reliable people. We call Bobby Firmino the system player now. He was the original system player. He was the one. And if you think back to that first full season under Klopp, that was the time when we really started to look like a team we could challenge. And him and Mane in particular, guys who really took that team to another level. So I will have fond memories of Lallana. I will also not forget the times when he wasn't great. On the how do we remember him scale, was somewhere between Daniel Agger and Luis Garcia in terms of the memories might not necessarily matter, but I'm happy for him to be maybe a little bit overestimated. How's that?
Yeah, that's nice. What are you saying, Liam? What are your Adam Lallana thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I do feel a little bit sorry for him. I think when he first, you know, when Klopp first comes to Liverpool, everyone forgets how important Lallana was. There's that goal against Norwich, you know, in the mad, what was it, 3-2. And Lallana's kind of performance during that season was all about the fact that he was the energy, he was the system, he was the presser, he was Klopp's go-to guy. And I do think that gets kind of forgotten in history. I also think, you know, the fact that he stayed, the fact he was given this contract is a testament to what Klopp thinks about him. It's a testament to what the team think about him. You know, you look back at fond memories of this season, and there's so many. But it does also come down to moments like Lallana's equaliser against Man U, which will get forgotten in the grand scheme of things. But this is a player who has contributed a lot. He has frustrated, but he should go down as a player who did help in the, you know, the wider terms of Klopp's transition, Klopp's transformation. And I think it's, yeah, he's not a Liverpool legend, but I do think he should be remembered fondly rather than as someone who kind of just had too many injuries and never got going, because those early periods, he was so important to what Liverpool and Klopp were trying to do.
Okay, let's wrap up then by just getting a prediction off everyone for the Burnley game on Saturday. Three bells kick off. Liam, what are you saying in terms of a prediction of the result?
I'm going to go 3-0. And Firmino scores his first goal at Anfield of the season.
Nice. Nice. Sanj?
3-1.
Who?
3-1. I'll go with that. I'll go with Bobby scoring and Mo to get two.
Nice. Nice. And what are you saying, Mo?
I'm going to say 4-1. Very similar to what this. Yeah. Very. I'll know that it should have been 4-1 last night, and the lads will want to put that right.
Okay, I like it. Okay, that has been the weekend. Do remember to cast the vote in the Embodiment of LFC Award. Look for that on Twitter. Thanks for listening. Stay with us across the weekend in terms of previewing that Burnley game, in terms of reviewing that Burnley game, videos, podcasts, stuff on the website, theanfieldapp.com. Up the Reds!
Sports Social Podcast Network.